Quarterback back at the five, steps up, gets drilled. Yes, sir, he gets mashed. And that is going to be the ball game. 6-5-4-3. They can't snap it. They can't stop it. They can't win it. Alabama wins the ball game.
Gary Thomas, linebacker, Alabama.
He was a nightmare for people that had to try to prepare for him because he had unique skills.
Just go get the quarterback. I felt sorry for some of those poor tackles that came in and had to go against him because they didn't realize what they were getting themselves into.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
Woo! Son, I got to do better than this.
Lights out.
Attacking the cornerback is just like you devastate a city, or you cream a multitude of people. I mean, it's just like you put all the offensive players in one bag, and I just take a baseball bat and beat on the bag. So each time he came over there, I tried to tear his damn head off.
Let's play some football! Let's play some football!
The pressure is on. This is Off the Edge on Tide 100.9.
Focus on what you want to do, what you want to accomplish. Think about that. Don't think about how you feel, how tired you are, how hot it is. You got to push yourself on the field when you're playing football.
It's my honor to present the National Championship Trophy to Coach Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide.
To me, this is the ultimate team. All these guys bought into everything they needed to do to be the best players that they could be. There's more togetherness on this team than almost any team that we've ever had. And they had to overcome and persevere so much adversity through this season. And they've done it magnificently. And I'm so proud of this group for what they've been able to accomplish in going undefeated and winning the national championship.
Streaming live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and the Tide 100.9 app. Here is your host of Off the Edge, Jacob Harrison.
Hello there, good morning, welcome in to Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports, T-minus 8 hours to the NFL Draft, 7 hours until the Tide 100.9 live draft special presented by Heat Pizza Bar. We're going to have a lot of fun breaking everything down. We'll talk with Ryan Roberts in about 12 minutes, get his thoughts on the NFL Draft, especially our Alabama Crimson Tide guys that we expect to go rather early. Yesterday, Daniel Jeremiah released his final mock draft, and while there was some craziness in it, including five receivers going in the top 11 picks, he had both Jameson Williams and Evan Neal go well ahead of schedule, with the Jets trading up to 9 to select Jameson Williams and the Giants opting to take Evan Neal with their 5th overall pick, the first of their two selections within the top 10. That would make for our night being rather short as far as content goes with the Alabama guys, but of course, no matter what happens, we'll analyze how all of those fits will exist. Because I've seen other situations where Evan Neal can possibly fall out of the top 10. We've seen it also with Jameson Williams throughout this entire process. So there's chances for these guys to go incredibly high, chances for them to dip a little bit lower than maybe we all hope. But nonetheless, these guys are going to fulfill their dreams. They're going to do exactly why they come to Alabama to do, and that's get to the NFL. I said it at the beginning of the week. It's what makes it so special around here and why I think we should revere it just a tad bit more than maybe. And yeah, I'm a psychopath when it comes to the NFL draft. But when you really kind of break it down, so many guys decide to come to Tuscaloosa to make that their path, the start of their journey to the NFL. and making life-changing money and you know, fulfilling their dreams, setting their family up for financial success for the rest of time. And, you know, you got to smile when you think about that, man. Like, Nick Saban helps these kind of things happen. Our efforts in supporting the university and the football program, that helps make it all happen. It's all one big family, so you got to be happy for the guys that are coming through and fulfilling their dreams tonight, Friday night, and as well as Saturday all throughout the day, and even the guys that may have to be undrafted free agents. It's just the opportunity, right? And you still make a boatload of money either way. So hopefully we'll get to see all of that unfold without too much chaos. But as I said, tonight, 6 p.m., immediately following the game with Ryan Fowler, we'll take over. It'll be myself, Kim Rankin, J.R. Moore, and Mason Woods. Joe Gaither will be here. A whole slew of our interns will be here. And we'll take in the NFL draft and have a hell of a time reacting to everything that happens tonight and anticipating what's going to happen in the future, breaking down what's happened with our Alabama Crimson Tide guys. Like I said, in about 9 minutes, we'll talk with Ryan Roberts of Rise and Draft, get his thoughts on anything NFL draft related. It's a good day, though. Like, this is, you wake up with energy, right? You wake up like it's Christmas morning if you bleed the NFL draft the way we do. I'm wearing a Troy Polamalu jersey, a gift from Alabama Vintage. It's one of the nicest Reebok jerseys I've ever seen. We got Mason Woods in there with a Derrick Henry jersey. Joe Gaither's wearing his Justin Fields jersey, and now Hunter Brantley's realizing he didn't get the memo, and he's just wearing a regular old T-shirt. What jersey? Do you own a jersey, Hunter Brantley?
I do. I should have worn a Julio Jones jersey.
Oh, that would have still just made
or
you
Matt
sad.
Ryan. Both I don't have any new guys.
Both
you know?
Of those would just make you sad.
I know, exactly. I don't have any new guys. I don't got any new merch.
And for what it's worth, by the end of the night, I don't think you're going to have any reason to not be just as sad as you were getting into the night, because the Falcons are still going to be bad no matter what they do tonight. So rest assured, all will stay normal with the Atlanta Falcons. But it's time to have that fun, right? It's time to get excited. And listen, one more reminder for you. Head over to Alabama Vintage. Pick up one of those jerseys so that you can celebrate today the way you want to, the way that you need to, and that's in style. You can also find great commemorative T-shirts and jackets, hats, shoes, memorabilia. So go check them out, 2210 University Boulevard, under the Crimson Awning across from City Hall in the heart of downtown T-Town. You can also find them online, alabamavtg.com. They ship everywhere, and if you spend $60 in the store, you get free shipping. So it works out, right? You take advantage of the fact that it's everywhere, and then you get free shipping because you're helping a small business, one of the best small businesses in all of Tuscaloosa. You can find them on Instagram as well to keep up with what's latest in stock, the latest deals, the latest events that Charlie's got going on at Alabama VTG. So just a rehash of the mock draft. So again, where I think, And listen, a lot of things have been turned on their heads, right? I have Aiden Hutchinson going number one overall. Do you know how many times in the past 48 hours I have seen very reputable mock draft and draft analysts and so on that just swear up and down, it's Trayvon Walker. So a guy with less than 9 sacks last year could very well be the first overall pick and turn everything on its head. Everywhere you look, this is the most wild NFL draft of the past 30 years. And, you know, nobody knows what's going to happen. All the talk, you could see 3 quarterbacks go in the top 10 because of trades. You could see just 1 quarterback go in the first round altogether. And I'm telling you, I mean, the Steelers are taking one. So, you know, it's got to happen at some point. It's just a matter of kind of where and what events help set off those kinds of runs. That's why when you look at everybody's mock draft, it's not a matter of when there is a run on wide receivers. It's a matter of where. Such as, like I mentioned, Daniel Jeremiah last night, as he's revealing his mock draft, he has 5 wide receivers going in the top 11. And then you can look in other mock drafts, and it kind of starts around 15 with the Philadelphia Eagles. And then you see other mock drafts, it's towards the end. It's closer to 28 and 29 with the Kansas City Chiefs and the Green Bay Packers. And in mine, there really didn't seem to be one, but there was a pretty good run there, kind of encompassing with the last bit of the first round and the top bit of the second round. So there's a lot of chaos that can unfold, and it's just a matter of what triggers that chaos in the NFL draft tonight. But as a reminder, I think ninth overall to the Seattle Seahawks is where we're going to see Evan Neal land. And I also think to the Jets is where we're going to see Jameson Williams. Now, whether or not that requires moving around for either of those teams, whether that means they can just stay put, I think at the very least, that's what we're going to see. And there's the Mac Jones jersey, Michael Brauner. No surprise there. No surprise there. As far as the other Alabama guys, you do have to wait just a tad bit longer. I think the Patriots move up for John Mechie. I think that's a solid fit. Everybody wants to make the jokes about Slade Bolden. And listen, Slade Bolden's going to be a New England Patriot by the end of the weekend. But they need a legitimate target for Mac Jones. And I like DeVante Parker, but that kind of meshes. If Parker is able to stay healthy, then he's a number one wide receiver. But if John Mechie is that guy there as well, that provides you a strong number one and number two option, whereas last year Mac didn't even have a number one option. So it certainly helps to speed along his progression. Going deeper, you have to get into the third round to find some more Alabama guys. I think Fedarian Mathis, where I mocked him, was the Detroit Lions. I think there's a plethora of places that make sense for Fedarian Mathis. The biggest thing is that I still think he is scheme versatile, but he needs to, if it's a 4-3 scheme, it still needs to be something that kind of incorporates that nose tackle, where he can be that modern nose tackle that can still be a pass rushing threat and doesn't necessarily eat up three blocks with his size and strength, but more so is able to be versatile in what he's able to do and squeeze through gaps and create plays rather than prevent plays. And the Lions are a space where that makes a lot of sense. The Houston Texans are who picked up Christian Harris. I think when you look at that off-ball linebacker position, you see a lot of volatility where if they all go early, that helps Christian Harris go earlier. But if they dip and they tend to go later, or if there's any sort of chaos with like Quay Walker, who's getting a lot of buzz as being a first round pick. I told you the other day, he was a third round pick in my mock draft. So that's one that I already know I've gotten wrong. If that's the case, then you're going to see some chaos there with Christian Harris, where he could go as high as early in the second round. He could dip into the third round just based off of the value, the needs, and the styles, the many different styles of linebackers in this draft. I don't think when it comes to the running back, Brian Robinson, I gave him to the Washington Commanders at the 99th overall pick. And I think that was a pretty strong guess. I think Washington wants to get back to, first of all, to the tradition. Yes, the meme, but the tradition of taking some of these Alabama guys. But Washington does need some help at running back and doesn't want to spend big capital on it, right? It'd be one thing, like, I think Brian Robinson fits in really well with, like, the Buffalo Bills, but the Bills have so much built into their franchise that they can afford to take a Breece Hall early. They're not going to sit around waiting for Brian Robinson to be at peak value, right? But if you've got a lot of picks and you can move around, you can get into what you feel is prime value for Brian Robinson. And if you think he's going to contribute as a rookie, then probably don't wait till the fourth round to get him, right? Sneak up into the late third. Pick him up, let him be a key piece on your offense. I think that's a strong possibility for a team like the Washington football team. I thought the Eagles made a lot of sense for Jalen Armour-Davis there as well towards the end of the third round. Whether, you know, they would have had to move up they sit still for that. But nonetheless, a lot of different landing spots for Jalen Armour-Davis, same as Fedarian Mathis. The biggest thing is that he needs time. He doesn't need to be immediately thrust in. He needs a team that has consistently been healthy at that position. And I know that's not necessarily been the Eagles, but over the past few years, they've been able to sustain a little bit more consistency in that space. They're not quite as desperate at that position as they have been in years past. So I think that's a good landing spot for him, but there's a plethora of other places that would also make sense where he's able to take his time getting onto the field. All right, we'll take a break, though. We'll come back. I encourage you, though, if you haven't checked out the mock draft, it's at Tide109.com. It's towards the top of the page while the show is on, so it's easy for you to find. But we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk with Ryan Roberts of Rise and Draft next here on Off the Edge. Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Lots of sunshine today with a warm afternoon, the high 81. For tonight, mostly fair with the low at 60. Tomorrow and Saturday, partially sunny and warm both days. We could see a few isolated showers around. Highs between 81 and 84. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 73 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Follow Off the Edge on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube for live streams and instant analysis. Off the Edge with Jacob Harrison continues.
Here on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. Jacob Harrison here with you, digital managing editor of Town Square Media Tuscaloosa. We got Mason Woods, Hunter Brantley, Michael Bronner, Joe Gaither. We got a new intern back there. We got a full house. We're going to have a full house tonight at 6 p.m. We're for a Tide 100.9 live draft special presented by Heat Pizza Bar. So be sure to stick around after the game with Ryan Fowler, and we'll react to all the picks live and have a lot of fun keeping up with where our Alabama Crimson Tide guys are going to go. Let's head out to the phone line. Let's talk with our friend Ryan Roberts from Rise and Draft, one of the best minds in all of draft scouting, independent scouting on Twitter. Strongly encourage you to go check him out there at Rise and Draft on the Twitter account and check out what he's got going on. He's been a very, very busy man. So we're so thankful, Ryan, that you were able to squeeze us in on your busy schedule with all the radio hits and podcasts that you've been doing. Unfortunate that we couldn't talk with you yesterday, but I've been there, so I completely understand. And it's just as exciting to get to talk with you today. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm good. If my, if some other things outside of the football spectrum didn't want to pop up during the week of the draft, it'd be great. But I appreciate the flexibility, and I appreciate it as always for you having me back on.
Yeah, I certainly appreciate it. And I saw the other day you mentioned, because you also do some coverage of Notre Dame recruiting, and they had some big news that popped up early in the week as well. So it's never just calm and peaceful during this week. And this draft is just as volatile as ever. One of the more unpredictable ones that we've ever been able to experience. I keep calling back to it, you know, for years now, at least by the time we get to Tuesday before the draft, we know who the first overall pick is. And even if it's been a bit of a mystery in the lead up, we kind of narrow it down. This one, I've still heard today people wanting to say Ikem Ekwonu. There's still a lot of people here in Tuscaloosa holding out hope for Evan Neal. But a lot of the big insiders are saying it's Trayvon Walker, and Aiden Hutchinson is nowhere to be found. What say you? Where does this thing land? What do the Jacksonville Jaguars do with that first overall pick?
I mean, it's really tough, man, because I've been pretty consistent over the last couple weeks that I was fully on the board that it was going to be Aiden Hutchinson. I know with the Trayvon Walker stuff that's popped up recently, and, I mean, Trent Baalke had a press conference a couple of days ago where he basically said there were four guys they'd be comfortable with at the top. In a traditional world, GMs, scouting departments, head coaches, they all know who they're going to take the Sunday night before or the Monday before the draft. I think that they have kind of settled on a player that they would want. I would still guess it'd be Aiden Hutchinson, even though it is not the betting favorite anymore, as you kind of mentioned there a second ago. But honestly, what I think is happening right now, why there's been just so much back and forth, so many players kind of put out into the universe with that potential for first overall selection, I think Jacksonville doesn't want to make the pick, to be very honest with you. I think that this is not a class. Every team wants to trade back in this class because there's no quarterback up top, and it's not a very top-heavy group in general. I think Jacksonville wants to do the same. So I think what their approach is to this is, going to put as many names out in the universe. We have four guys. There's four guys with two mystery guys included in this four, right? And they're just begging, I think, and trying to manufacture some interest where hey, guys, come up with number one, because your guy might not be there anymore that you thought was going to be there all the time. So I think I think that's what the strategy is right now for Bulky and the crew. Ultimately, I don't think it's going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, I still think it's going to be Aiden Hutchinson. But I really just honestly do not think that Jacksonville wants to make that pick.
Yeah, for my sake and my mock draft, I hope you're right on the Aiden Hutchinson thing, because I feel my Monday mock was already kind of outdated by the time we got to Wednesday. So no doubt about that. But one of the names that Ian Rappaport suggested would be in that four was Evan Neal. And, you know, early on in this process, a lot of us here in Tuscaloosa thought that, you know, the wait since 1948 would be over, that there would finally be a first overall pick from the University of Alabama, and the first one for Nick Saban as well in Evan Neal. But if that's not the case, and I've said it until I'm blue in the face of the defense of why the Jaguars should go in that direction, but it makes sense to build the defense through the draft as well after spending so much money on offense. Would it be something that they would regret in not taking Evan Neal or even an Ike Ekwonu to help protect Trevor Lawrence and get the ball to guys like Christian Kirk that they spent so much money on?
Yeah, I think last time I was on, I said, you know, pretty much verbatim, like, I would draft Evan Neal first overall. It's just, if I could not move out of that spot, that's who I would take, because I'm of the belief that you have your quarterback in place. He was in a very volatile situation last year with Urban Meyer. You're going into the Doug Peterson era. You still have Trent Baalke a part of the equation. There's a lot of uncertainty moving forward for Trevor Lawrence, who I thought was the best quarterback that I had ever evaluated. So for me, I need to improve the assets around him. I need to keep him protected. And I know that Cam Robinson just got that contract extension after signing his franchise tender. I mean, again, like, I don't think Cam Robinson should stop you from drafting a player that can be an asset for you. So even if you draft Evan Neal and you want Cam Robinson, obviously, to be a part of the equation, let him play right tackle. Like, let's not overthink this, right? Because your best asset right now is that you have Trevor Lawrence on a rookie deal. You have to protect him. Last year, the offensive line was not good in Jacksonville. Like, it was just bad. You've spent money in free agency to improve the wide receiver group. Like you said, Christian Kirk is a guy that's being overpaid, but, like, you needed to get some assets around him to, you know, be a little dynamic in space. But now we need to improve this offensive line. I feel like Evan Neal would have made so much sense. I don't think it's ultimately going to happen anymore. But if I was still sitting there, Cam Robinson on that 3-year contract that he signed, that would not stop me from drafting Evan Neal. If I think that he is the best offensive lineman in the draft, and I think that is my priority to protect my number one asset, I still think Evan Neal would have been the correct pick, but ultimately I don't think that's the pick that they're going to make.
It certainly would seem that way, and I can't help but agree as well. You got to protect the franchise. We say it all the time. You get your quarterback, if you get him before the rebuild's done, start putting things around to make him better. But Jags are going to do what the Jags are going to do, and I think they'll be successful either way on the other side of it, but it's going to take some time to certainly get Trevor Lawrence to the space where we all think he should be, and that's being an elite quarterback. Jameson Williams. It's kind of funny. Like, one day on the show, my producer, Mason Woods, just kind of randomly, I don't know if he gave it more forethought than I'm giving him credit for here, but randomly just gave the thought that maybe the Jets is the best spot for Jameson Williams at the 10th overall pick. And I could never come off of it. And that's where I feel like he's going to wind up. And it feels kind of good to see so many other minds start to lean that way as well. But if it is the Jets, there's a strong possibility he has to be the first receiver selected in this draft. Would your shock level be changed very much if that is the case, if Jameson Williams is the first overall, the first wide receiver selected in this draft?
No, it wouldn't shock me at all. I mean, I don't think anything in this draft would shock me, because I think it's just so wide open. You could sell me that it'd be Garrett Wilson as the first receiver. You could sell me that it'd be Drake London. You could sell me that it'd be Jameson Williams. It's an interesting conversation, because all three of them are just so different. You know, it's Jameson only has a 1-year of production, but he's the most dynamic receiver in this class. Incredible speed. And I thought he had more nuance as a receiver route runner than I anticipated for a guy that really only had 1 year of extensive playing time, obviously transferring over from Ohio State. So I thought he had a tremendous year. I think that he brings a dynamic element that's you know, obviously lacking with the New York Jets right now. But then you have Garrett Wilson, who's a little more well-rounded, three-level threat, not quite as explosive, but he's a really nice route runner, can win above the rim. And then you got Drake London, who is a skyscraper former basketball player who also has some yak ability. So they're completely different players. So depending on whatever team, New York Jets in this scenario, are going to take the first wide receiver, I could see him going any direction, because I know everyone made a big deal about Jameson Williams injuring his ACL, but an ACL injury is just nothing nowadays, man. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, he's going to be back in time for the start of the season. He's going to be good to go. He's a dynamic player. I don't think anybody's, you know, kind of – I don't think that's going to weigh that much into the conversation. So it really just depends on what the Jets are looking for out of their wide receiver. I've heard for a while now that the Jets have been infatuated a little bit with Drake London. I've heard lately that Garrett Wilson is also well-liked, and then obviously the recent news of Jameson Williams. So it literally is a toss-up. It could happen. I'm not 100% sure which one it will be, man. It's really dependent on what their flavor is. What is the progress that you're trying to make? Are you trying to be a more explosive offense? Because then I would say you're leaning towards Jameson or Garrett. Or are you trying to find a guy that kind of complements Elijah Moore better, trying to get a skyscraper outside that you thought Corey Davis was, but, you know, just was not great in the role last year? So it really depends on what their goal is at the wide receiver position is. You could sell me either way. I think Jameson has just as good a chance as anybody.
Is there a fit that you like for Jameson? One of the things that kind of ties me into to liking the Jets fit so much is the arm strength of a Zach Wilson that can kind of take advantage of his deep threat ability. Is there a team out there that realistically can select him within the top half of the draft that you think fits J-Mo the best?
No, I mean, I love the fit. I really do love the fit, because, I mean, the only other fits that I would like better are, you know, if he somehow got to the Chiefs or Patrick Mahomes, right, or he was there 25 to the Bills, you know, and those obviously seem like unrealistic at this point. So I'm a fan of that pick. I also would not put it past, I know Green Bay has never really valued the receiver position in the first round, but they have two first round picks. Maybe they're going to be aggressive. They like a guy like a Jameson Williams. Maybe if he's not the first wide receiver off the board, he's more in like the 12 to 13 type of range. Maybe you trade up for him. But I think that he's such a dynamic player that any team could use him. But definitely a stronger arm quarterback is where I want to put him with, because his ability to win vertically is just outmatched in this class.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Chiefs. They have more picks than anybody in this draft. Got a lot of capital 12 from that Tyreek Hill. They could trade up and make one of the most dangerous connections in the NFL once J-Mo is healthy. Speaking of guys that got healthy, I mean, John Metchie obviously sustained his injury before Jameson Williams did, but his stock was going to be a little bit lower because he's not quite as explosive. But he's a great volume receiver. I've seen a lot of comparisons to Jarvis Landry, and I think that's probably the best kind of idea for him. So a second-round grade for him as a healthy product makes a lot of sense. But I've seen him continuously kind of slip, you know, earlier and earlier in that second round. How early should Alabama fans be expecting to hear John Metchie's name on day two?
I would guess somewhere mid to late second round. That seems like kind of a good spot for him. So I think that what we're seeing is that people are going to, you know, have some hesitancy in a player that's coming off an injury. But I think that's never really his game either way, right? Like, he's much more a technician, understanding blind spots, being a good route runner, having a smooth all-around profile. So I've always liked John Metchie for what he brings to the game. I think it is rock solid in everything he does. I don't think that he'll ever be a true number one receiver, but, I mean, you mentioned, you know, maybe he's a Jarvis Landry type. Maybe he's a guy that I think could play a little bit inside and out. So I still think mid to second round is going to be someplace, or mid to late for second round, excuse me, that kind of fits John Metchie's style, because he's a really good football player, there's no doubt. It's just, you know, high volume receiver, like you said. Maybe not the true number one type, but I think he has a lot to offer, obviously, to an NFL offense, and I think the NFL really does like him a lot.
Talking with Ryan Roberts at Rise and Draft on the Twitter account. It's also the website, riseanddraft.com. No fluff, it's just the NFL draft. Go check it out, riseanddraft.com. Ryan, with Christian Harris, we start getting deeper into those mid-round guys. I see a trend that has nothing to do with Harris kind of affecting his value, where it's one of those things where if something chaotic with, like, Quay Walker being one of the first linebackers selected, or Devin Lloyd starts to creep lower, or N'Kobe Dean starts to creep lower, then it kind of has this chaotic effect on Christian Harris, where he drops even further, like down into the third round. But with him having such a fit for what NFL defenses are looking for these days, with those speedy sideline to sideline linebackers that are above average in coverage, like, I know he has a lot of problems, and most of it's 3 yards within the line of the scrimmage, but is it really that simple, or am I off base here? Is he a commodity that the NFL will truly enjoy to have and try to take in the second round?
Yeah, no, I think he's firmly in the second round conversation, to be honest. I mean, he went into the season with a really nice grade from Blesto and National and all those services that kind of give you an early understanding of where people like him. Like you said, that type of athlete on the second level is not an ordinary thing, right? Like, that kid's a legitimate 4-4 type of athlete who has sideline-to-sideline speed and is incredibly aggressive. When you get him downhill, he's about as good as any linebacker in this class. It's just the question mark is diagnostic skills, eyes in the run game. Like, things are just a little bit inconsistent right now with Christian Harris, but we have seen teams time and time again gamble on those types of players. Gerard Davis was once a first-round pick. We just saw Jamin Davis from Kentucky get drafted in the first round as a one-year wonder just because of trade. So I think he's going to get drafted somewhere in the second round. I think the only thing that could be a hindrance is the fact that he is in a very talented linebacker unit this year. It's quietly one of the strongest and deepest classes in this year's NFL draft. So it's going to be a little tough, but I think that he does have the opportunity to be drafted very high because he's a very talented football player, without a doubt.
Yeah, because you could like other types of linebackers and like a Chad Muma better, or maybe he fits your scheme a little bit better, and that again would hinder Christian Harris if Muma went ahead of him, and that's certainly a possibility. Jalen Armour-Davis, a guy that we've seen kind of rise throughout this entire thing. We're all big fans of him around here because he was the number one cornerback at Alabama last season. And the end of the season with his injuries kind of just tore everything apart. But nonetheless, I mean, we talk about guys that are able to match Sauce Gardner in something and being one of the few Division I corners to not give up a touchdown pass. There's a lot to love with Jalen Armour-Davis. Still fully anticipate him being a mid-day two kind of guy, but what about him is what's setting him apart to help him continue to rise his draft stock?
Well, I mean, one, he was on Alabama, where, you know, you have to give a little plus to a team, to a player that was coached by Nick Saban, right? Like, he's one of the better developer of cornerbacks, you know, historically. So that goes into his favor. And then the other part is that he's a really talented football player. You know, he's got long arms. He's got length for days. He's a really explosive player. I mean, he ran like in the 4.3s at the combine. Like, the talent level is always there for Armour-Davis. It's just about playing time. You know, he hadn't had an extensive amount of playing time, and then he gets injured down the latter stage of the season that costs him a lot of time. So he's a really talented player. I think you're just, you know, it's more betting on traits than productivity at this point. But I still think he's going to go in the third round. I would be a little surprised just a touch to be last before, just because you're always going to look for traits at the cornerback position, and he certainly has it for days.
Last prospect I want to ask you about is Christopher Allen. And big reason why is he missed all of last season. Had a lot of anticipation that he would pair really well with Will Anderson and create a ferocious pass rush, but unfortunately got hurt in the first game of the season. Pro day comes around. He's dressed out, but he doesn't do anything. But you could tell, like, he sat close to coaches and scouts and GMs, and I saw him have a really long conversation with Steelers GM Kevin Colbert. So there's obviously something there that connects. He's going to be a solid professional. But earlier in the week, I saw The Athletic. They mocked him at like 102 to the Miami Dolphins. Everybody's going to be kind of scattered on this, but I didn't anticipate to see his name that early. I mean, late day three at best because of the injury. Is there something there that I'm missing? Should we expect to hear Chris Allen's name a bit earlier?
Yeah, I mean, I was more in the fourth to fifth round conversation, because I think before he did get injured, I mean, he was having a really strong first game, and he was the year before he had a really solid season, so you're expecting him to take the next step forward. He's another kid that has traits. Like, it's got length, he's got athleticism, he's had production in spurts. It's just always been about injuries with a guy like Christopher Allen. But I know the guy that's working with him extensively as his private coach, and he's speaking volumes as far as not only the athletic traits, but just the work ethic he has, you know, get back from that injury and get healthy. So I think that he's going to go earlier than some people anticipate. I know that most mock drafts, you probably don't even see him in like the fourth or fifth round. I expect probably more fourth round conversation from NFL teams because I think that there are obviously some injury question marks. But I wouldn't be surprised if he goes a little earlier if the medicals completely check out, because I think he's a talented player in terms of, like, he's a day two type of talent. It's just obviously there are things outside of his out of his control at times that, you know, obviously hindered him a little bit during the latter stages of his career.
I want to give you a break from the Alabama guys for just a second. And one of the things, you know, I'm wearing my Steelers jersey today. I am in full anticipation that hopefully Malik Willis is a Pittsburgh Steeler by the end of the day. And it's not, I'm not going to ask you a selfish question about is that going to happen or anything like that. But the chaos of the quarterback story in this draft is so unique. The idea that you could argue that there could be three in the top 10 if teams trade up. You could argue that only one goes before 20, or maybe the one at 20 is the only one you get with the Steelers. What do you kind of anticipate seeing happening with these quarterbacks? Are you going to have to move to get the one you want, or can you play patiently and get the quarterback that falls to you in this draft?
I think you might have to move a little bit, to be honest. I know there's kind of this perception that this is not a great quarterback class, and it's absolutely true. But I do think that there's enough quarterback needy teams in the top 10 where you're going to have to probably mortgage a little bit to get up if you really value a Malik Willis or a Kenny Pickett or even a Desmond Ridder, who I think is going to go in the first round. So, I mean, you have Carolina at 6, which makes a lot of sense for a quarterback, even though it's a little bit of an awkward situation. You have number 8 to Atlanta. You have 9 to Seattle. I'm sure one of those teams will probably be willing to trade back if the Steelers, for instance, were a team that wanted to move up. But I think you might need to be a little active just because I think quarterbacks are going to go a little earlier in this draft than people anticipate because I don't think it's an incredibly talented group up top.
And like any draft, you start getting to that early second round of your mock draft, and you're like, oh, this guy could be a first rounder. I do the same thing, man. Lewis Seen, N'Kobe Dean, Arnold Ebiketie. I love all those guys as potential first, but you only get 32 picks. Do you have a favorite kind of guy that's in that space? Maybe one that we're not thinking about, but just somebody that's kind of in that space where they should be a first rounder, and it wouldn't be too crazy for a team to trade in and pick up that talent.
Yeah, I think two guys that come to mind is Leo Chenault from Wisconsin. He's got kind of this label as this, you know, just tough downhill linebacker out of Wisconsin. But he ran 4.53 at the combine, 40-inch vert at 250 pounds. Really talented football player. I think a lot of teams are going to value not only his run stopping ability, but also I think he has upside as he kind of continues to work more in pass coverage. That's just something that Jim Leonard did not do much of Wisconsin. The other one, Sean Ryan, offensive tackle out of UCLA, that I also think could be a really dominant interior offensive lineman. He's a player for me that I think is seriously underrated, to be honest with you, and a guy that I know the Green Bay Packers really do like a ton because they kind of value that versatility to play multiple positions, kind of like an Elgton Jenkins type of player. So incredible core strength, incredible power, incredible flexibility for a guy his size. So I keep an eye out for Sean Ryan and Leo Chenault. I wouldn't be surprised if either one ends up going in the late first round.
He's the director of recruiting, irisbreakdown.com, a part of Sports Illustrated, and the NFL draft analyst of riseindraft.com. And we love having him on to break it all down. And next year it's going to be a hell of a lot more fun because we're going to be talking about Bryce Young and Will Anderson and a whole slew of guys that could help break the first round record for one team. Ryan, I appreciate all that you've given us in the pre-draft. We'll talk to you again after the draft, I'm sure. But nonetheless, I hope you have a fantastic rest of your day and rest of your weekend, and you're able to soak this thing in and not have to work that hard.
Absolutely, brother. I appreciate you as always.
Absolutely. Ryan Roberts helping us out there. Follow him on Twitter at RisenDraft. He's one of the best out there. Strongly suggest it. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Continue the show here on Off the Edge. Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
We aren't going anywhere. Off the Edge is available in the podcast center on Tide100.9.com.
Searchlight.
100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. So here's the thing. Nick Saban owns the record for most first-round selections by a coach at a single program, that being at 39. By the end of the day, it will be at least 41 once Evan Neal and Jameson Williams are both selected. But our friend Clint Lamb the other day brought up an interesting point. Alabama has only had one position now on both offense and defense that hasn't had a first-round pick yet. Do any of you on that side of the glass know? Offense or defense?
Okay, center?
Ryan Kelly.
Oh, never mind then. All right, we can do this. Center, Ryan Kelly. Guard is going to be the Titans fellow.
Yeah, James Carpenter. You got, yeah,
we got a ton of tackles. We've had two quarterbacks now. I guess technically, no, two quarterbacks. We've had a handful of running backs. We've had a handful of receivers. Tight end is out as well, O.J. Howard. So we're on the defensive side of the ball.
Yep.
We're on the defensive side of the ball. Marcell Dareus for defensive tackle. Jonathan Allen, Daron Payne, defensive end. Quentin Williams, you've got C.J. Mosley on for your inside linebacker. You've got tons of safeties and tons of corners. The only logical end is edge,
yep,
outside linebacker.
Edge linebacker. And wouldn't you, I mean, next year, it's going to happen. Next year, it's going to happen. Will Anderson will be a first-round pick. And listen, I mean, yeah, I might be drawing a little bit here, but I mean, you heard Ryan Roberts talk about Chris Allen. Imagine if he doesn't get hurt. And the edge class that exists here, that might have already been completed had that not happened. And you also heard that. I think it's a big revelation that we should take pretty seriously, is the fact that Chris Allen might not have to wait until day three to hear his name called. I love that. Good for that guy. That speaks to, like, you already have, like, the skills to go pretty far. But when you're able to show what you've got, and then have to deal with that kind of injury that keeps you out for the rest of the year, but you spend the time, you talk, you interview well, you converse with these teams and create relationships that start to spill out into the draft community, then you can hear your name called a tad bit earlier. And I mean, that's a lot bit earlier. I mean, 102 is a lot bit earlier. I mean, that's the third round. That's insane to me. But I mean, early in the fourth instead of late in the fourth, early in the fourth instead of in the fifth, sixth, seventh, undrafted, that's way better. That is way better. But yeah, edge, I mean, next year we're going to be talking about Will Anderson and Bryce Young and having that first overall pick. It's a shame it won't happen this year, but you kind of have to take it for what it is. One more reminder for you tonight, 6 p.m., we're going to have the live draft special presented by Heat Pizza Bar. It's going to be myself, Kim Rankin, Mason Woods, J.R. Moore, not Michael Bronner. Michael said no. Michael said, I'm going to hang out with my real friends. But nonetheless, we're going to have fun. It'll be more interns. Joe Gaither will be there as well, I'm sure. So we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to break all of this down. We're going to be listening live. You'll get to hear Roger Goodell make the picks. I mean, it's going to be straightforward, breaking down everything that we're going to see in that hour before the draft, and then reacting to all of these players being selected, especially our Alabama Crimson Tide guys. But one guy that we're not going to be able to react to tonight that I wish we would, and we talked about him, just the one question with Ryan, but I think you kind of got to, like, really put this in perspective about John Metchie and why I think he's such a good fit for a team like the Patriots. But really think about that for a second. Okay, and I know there's some divisiveness amongst Alabama fans on John Metchie, but definitely not a number one wide receiver kind of guy. He's just not. But he is the best number two you can possibly ask for, because on this team last year, definitely not the number one receiver, but 96 receptions. Like, that's something Alabama has to find a way to replace. And so you can't undervalue that. That is a lot of targets and a lot of receptions, and that shows the ability to get open and to make plays. Is he going to be ridiculously explosive and game-changing? Probably not. But if you look around this draft class, and there are so many big names to which he falls behind, and so many just athletic freaks to which he falls behind, there's a strong – I mean, I'm not tagging Old Takes Exposed on anything and going out on any crazy limbs, but there's a strong chance you look at John Mechie in this class and you look at the rest of the class, and you could probably confidently say that Mechie could have more reception in his career than any of these guys. And there would be some value to that. Because I think, again, if you compare him to Jarvis Landry, that's exactly what Landry has always been, is a production guy who hauls in just a ton of receptions, and there's true value in that. Now, granted, Landry's having a hard time finding a job right now, but he's been in the league for a very long time and has played for a lot of successful teams. So I think when you narrow that down, it helps out. And what does a guy like Mac Jones really need? What do most quarterbacks need? But really, a guy like Mac Jones with his kind of skill set, he needs a volume reception kind of guy. He needs a guy that allows Mac Jones to get the ball out of his hands quick, no matter the circumstances. Most quarterbacks need a guy like that. Many in the NFL have a guy like that. And I think that's why you see a really good fit there for Mac Jones and the New England Patriots when it comes to John Mechie. I'm excited to see where he lands tonight, wherever the chips may fall. I'm hoping for Malik Willis. And I know that Mason is hoping for anybody but Desmond Ridder. He'll even take Kenyon Green at this point, right? Yeah, yeah. Get a positive response on that one for the first time in a while. Just not Desmond Ridder. All of us are in heavy favor against Desmond Ridder being called to any of our teams tonight. But nonetheless, we're going to have a lot of fun. So I'll close it down here now. The Jay Barker Show is coming up next. I'll see you in about 6 hours for this live draft special presented by Heat Pizza Bar right after the game here on Tide 100.9. The NFL draft is here. Are you ready? We'll see you tomorrow here on Off the Edge. Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Lots of sunshine today with a warm afternoon, the high 81. For tonight, mostly fair with the low at 60. Tomorrow and Saturday, partially sunny and warm both days. We could see a few isolated showers around. Highs between 81 and 84. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 73 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Thank you for listening to